Natalie Reed, County Council. I don't personally have experience with these districts before, but I can note that the creation of the district would be a separate legal entity from the county. In regards to the creation of the district, the adoption of the infrastructure financing plan, and the division of taxes there under, you know, for the board's decision making, there is a very short statute of limitations period, which is 30 days after creation of the district. So if there was going to be a challenge, you would know very quickly.
I guess a question to the city is another avenue, I guess, you could go besides this, and I don't know if you tried this, was now that the site is cleaned up, to go through private development by forgiving, say, taxes for a certain period of time, whether incentives the city might do to have a private entity do this. I'm not a fan of government being in business.
Yeah. So, as mentioned, if we don't have a partnership, you know, we could go that route. The issue becomes paying back for that infrastructure over time becomes patient equity, and there aren't a lot of developers that are willing to sit around for 20 years to be paid back for the cost of that infrastructure. If we go and we form an EIFD as a city, you know, will take about 8 years or so to get to the point where we have enough money to put infrastructure in. But we then have, A, we have access to more grants. If you have an EIFD in place, it opens up a whole new world of additional funding sources, one. Number two, when somebody comes in and they decide to develop and they're willing to put the infrastructure in the ground, we can promise them that they'll see the return on the cost of that infrastructure in a much shorter time frame.
And then my final question is, in looking at the facts and figures of the money that's going to be generated from the different types of infrastructure, for our county, those look a little optimistic to me. And I'm just wondering where you derive those figures from on the return.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So we're economists, but we're not planners. So we always rely on planning documentation. So I want to say a few things. So we relied on previous planning documentation for mostly the landing site that was sort of documented before we even came into the picture. And we scaled that back a bit, quite honestly, because the vision we thought as well, potentially optimistic. So we dialed it back. The second comment I want to make is we also project these out over a very long period of time. There's no perspective that this is an overnight thing. So the projection that you saw in units and square footage, I believe we projected something more like a 20 or 25 year time horizon. Still, maybe optimistic, but I want to clarify it's a long-term vision. But the source of it was planning documentation that existed before we came in, and we even dialed that back.
I just look at the rate of failure in this county with businesses and other developments, and that's why I said it looks a little pretty optimistic.
Okay.
Okay.
So, there's a question?
So I guess where I'm having difficulty is, from what I understand, I'm assumed a no vote already. that word has gotten out, and I don't appreciate that. But I'm keeping an open mind. Mount Shasta is an epic center for litigation countywide. Always has been. It's been a no-growth city, even when I was in business, and fought that. I'm encouraged by new election to the council at like Tessa Kluwer. That's encouraging from those of us looking on the outside. We had a rocky road with the city and the county in the interaction on Crystal Geyser. And the track record doesn't bear out, you know, that this is going to be a smooth process. I have difficulty believing that this is going to just roll out and there's going to be no litigation or a fight back. It's troublesome, but I'll dig in a little further. 45 years to come back at the county for beginning to receive that benefit is a long time. I know that's the way these are structured, but that's a heck of a long time to realize, you know, something that will come back to the county. More than likely, most of us in this room won't be here at that time to reap that benefit. I don't know if that can change. There's assumptions that the city's going to annex county lands that are, I assume, commercial in what you've proposed as well, and I don't know anything about that dialogue at this juncture. Is the potential, I guess, tax revenue that would come from this district where it freezes the base tax and the increased tax is what you're going to be operating from, is that enough? Because I heard you say, you know, it's small, but is there enough to actually finance infrastructure for even one project? And I guess this is going to happen through a bond. Am I correct?
Some of these do statewide, not this one. We don't think the numbers are there to issue
a bond?
Yeah.
Okay. I noticed in the presentation that affordable housing is tax exempt. So that doesn't even hit the bottom line that normally would come to the general fund, to the schools, and to the city altogether. The committee has one county representative, if I heard that correctly. And if we're in partnership, is it 50-50? Is it 75-25? How does that work? And where is the equity for current commercial established businesses that are already in place that have had to pay for their own infrastructure? Where does the equity come to them?
I'm going to try to start at the top, and I didn't have my pen. Sorry.
Okay.
But if I do forget one, please do remind me. What's there? So maybe I'll start on the topic of CEQA and litigation has come up a number of times, so clearly a big issue here. So just clarify a technical point. So everything about the plan and the financing thing, it's not a project under CEQA, would not be subject to CEQA. We file an exemption throughout the process because it's a financing mechanism, not subject to CEQA. What is, of course, is whatever you end up building, right? If it's infrastructure or whatever private development happens there, absolutely those go through CEQA with or without this financing mechanism. So this obviously plays a role in that, but on its own is not subject. I forgot the first one. I only remember the last part. Could you remind me of
the litigation, the 45-year span?
Thank you. So probably an error in our presentation. We showed, because there's so many ways to show like profit and return, we chose over district lifetime of approximately 45, 50 years what it is. But no, we would not expect the city or the county to wait 45 years to start seeing return. That number that we showed was a summation of annual numbers over a 45-year period. We believe that the greatest bang for the buck, so to speak, does indeed come after the district finishes, you turn the spigot off, and you have zero encumbrance of property tax revenue. What we are indeed showing, there's a graphic in there with like a green line and a blue line, is that the return does start as soon as growth is catalyzed. And when we say return, we're saying the portion of the revenues that are not allocated to the district. Very importantly, taking into consideration any expenditures that the county would have to endure to provide services to these new people who would live in whatever development happens there. So net of that, you would start seeing modest, but something positive much sooner. Within 10 years, you start seeing something positive, but no major bang for your buck. So the greatest return, yes, after that long, but it's not that no return happens until that point. I definitely want to clarify that. It was probably an error in our presentation.
Sorry. assumed annexation.
Thank you. So I have to plead ignorance on this, but I do want to make a point that, so we've done this a couple times, one most recently in Napa County, where we did one of these districts and there was consideration of county areas, unincorporated county areas, and when the county said we need some time to think about it, the city said, okay, we'll leave that alone and we'll just pursue or move forward with just the currently incorporated. And if the county joins at a later year, then we include the unincorporated areas. This can work with or without. I just want to be very clear that city can't control things in unincorporated areas. There's no argument there. What we had discussed very preliminarily with Deputy CAO is a possible scenario is you have, if the city moves forward without the county, forget the unincorporated areas, we'll just remove them from the district. What's on the map is a draft map. If the county does join, we have the flexibility in the EIFD law to provide scenarios. Scenarios could include, if we include some of those unincorporated pockets, the county either only allocates some property tax if it's annexed, or the base case is county allocates in any case, with or without annexation, if the county is a partner. So this can remain somewhat agnostic, somewhat flexible in either of those scenarios. It does not directly affect the annexation. Any annexation would, of course, have to go through LAFCO and all the standard policies, but this tool can be made to sort of be a negotiation point, if you want to go there, on future annexation. But our firm has not been involved with any annexation. If any of the other speakers want to address potential annexation, please do. I don't have any specific knowledge of what's happening.
Maybe CAO wants to mention, talk about annexations.
Yeah, so again, it's a proposed annexation process, and we wanted to get this rolling about a year ago, and we floated an RFP three times for a team that has LAFCO experience and has annexation experience, and with the dearth of planners and folks with expertise in this area, we haven't gotten any bites, and so that's why it's kind of been on the back burner. We have a firm that just did our housing element update that wants to do the work. They are going to get back to me in the next 2 weeks to let me know if they have the bandwidth, and we're hoping that they can take that on. But again, it's aspirational, and if it's something that the county doesn't want to participate in, I completely understand that.
Then is it enough to finance infrastructure for even one of the projects?
Yeah, so that's an important question. And just to be completely transparent, when I was discussing previously with Deputy CAO, I thought that was an appropriate question. Is it worth it? Like, that's a very legitimate question. And we think, to do a debt issuance? No. The only way to do a debt issuance, to issue bonds? No, it's not worth it. The only scenario we think this does make sense if there is a partnership with the private sector and there is someone like folks who are the city manager who may be willing to actually advance funding from private debt and equity sources and be reimbursed with a tool like this, because there's not enough dollars to pay a ton of interest costs and pay consultants and debt issuance attorneys all the fees just to do a debt issuance of a couple $100,000. That doesn't make sense. But it can absolutely be an efficient use of funds and enough funds to actually do some core infrastructure if we have someone like a private sector partner. So will it fund everything? No, I don't think so. Will it fund everything? But can it make a dent in some of the key water, sewer, and roadway? We do believe so.
The affordable housing tax exempt.
Yeah, so with or without the district, of course, affordable housing tends to be property tax exempt due to the way the entities are set up that develop these as nonprofits. So there's no other way around that with or without these financing districts if they're affordable housing. Yeah, they are property taxes that they don't generate property tax. We often do analysis to say what sort of do they contribute, just to be very, speaking loosely, but from a financial perspective. So we do typically do an analysis of incomes, what they may be in off-site taxable spending that may generate some minor sales tax. That's typically as much as we see as far as revenues go. But it's I guess I'm just agreeing with the point that that is a fact of affordable housing.
Okay. Then the one county member on the committee.
Well, thank you. Yes. So that is very important. So we've got five individuals in the standard public financing authority setup. It is flexible. I should have said that earlier. It is flexible. The law allows some flexibility. It has to be at least five, but it could be more. The standard that's been utilized elsewhere within the state is of those five, two are members of the city council, one is the county supervisor, one is a public member appointed by the city council, and one is a public member appointed by the county board of supervisors. Public member means a member of the public don't necessarily have to live or work in the community. It tends to be someone who lives or works in the community, but it is not required actually to be someone who lives or works in the community. And that's just what's been working so far, honestly, just out of practicality to convene meetings and have people show up and conduct business. It can be more. So you could have two and two if you wanted to. I just wanted to reiterate the point that whatever plan gets prepared is indeed, aside from what the PFA says, must be separately approved by the full city council, separately approved by the full county board of supervisors. Only then can that public financing authority put the final stamp.
And then lastly, where's the equity for the current established commercial properties?
Yeah.
That have paid for their infrastructure.
Yeah. I guess all I can say about that is that it all comes down to the type of infrastructure being paid for. These districts were drafted to address what they call infrastructure of community-wide and regional significance, not really project-specific stuff. What we've been talking about for this type of district are things like water tank facilities that don't just benefit a single property or set of properties, but like a part of the community that includes these parcels that we're trying to catalyze, but not just for them. So, I mean, it's not really the best answer, but I just want to clarify, this is not supposed to be a project subsidy. This is meant to be infrastructure. That's all these things can pay for, infrastructure that benefits more than just a project, a whole community or a portion of a community, in some cases, even a region. I wouldn't say that's the scale we're at here, but I guess that's all I can really say.
So, and you know, I just will use the example of when the shopping center was built in Mount Shasta. It took away from the downtown area, and downtown struggled for a very long time. Many businesses closed. You have potentially that could happen in this instance. It did balance out long term, but initially for about five, maybe a little longer years, downtown looked pretty desolate until some came back and started opening up shops. It's thriving currently. But usually when there's a pull away for more commercial development away from that center, it does businesses will struggle. So I hope that you're keeping that in mind as well. Thank you.
There's probably that sort of wisdom that, so they adopted a bill, Senate Bill 961, that added a type of improvement that these things can pay for. And I wonder if it was around that logic. I hadn't previously thought about it. But it's now on the list of things you can pay for are facilities that benefit small businesses. They specifically called out small businesses. And so they started adding things like facade improvement grant type things or infrastructure that benefits existing businesses. That didn't exist until a year and a half ago. So now it's eligible. We didn't have it on our list. So I'm not here to change deal points. You can change deal points, of course. But that is a possibility if we wanted this district, if you had interest and you wanted this district to work, we can add that as sort of what could be available from the proceeds if we wanted to go down that route. I hadn't previously thought about it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And if I could add something to the discussion about taking away from downtown, part of this process when we're looking at the landing and the other sites that we'd like to consider is... we revisit the general plan to figure out what kind of uses on these properties make the most sense, and we can use zoning as a tool to do our best to ensure that we're not competing with downtown based on the allowable uses in these areas. So that's part of the process, so that's built in.
Thank you.
Can you revisit costs to the county? What's the initial cost to the county out of the general fund and then yearly costs?
The initial costs just staff time. So I know that comes at a cost, I just don't know what the dollars are. But everything as far as preparing paperwork, that's all part of our contract to produce for city staff review and county staff review. So that's all on us. But staff time does come at a cost. We have to realize that. Ongoing cost, similarly, it's typically contracted. The lead agency, in our experience, not throwing the city under the bus, this is really the way it typically works. City kind of pays as the lead agency for whatever paperwork needs to be prepared annually, for things like the annual report, which is like a 5-page report, or any auditing that gets done. It would be typically a part of the city's annual comprehensive financial report. County auditor controller will have paperwork annually. So this is another calculation that has to be done annually for this specific area. We'll have a separate breakout of how the taxes need to go. So that's another staff time thing. Again, not that we're talking on major dollars here, but staff time is allowed to come out of the dollars allocated to the district. So if the county auditor controller has staff time, it could be paid for by that property tax increment, which comes from both the city and the county. And then other than that, the main one is this property tax increment. It's no portion of today's dollars, so it's not like a cost today, but it is indeed a piece of future property tax that comes from within this boundary. Even if it is just a small amount of growth, you are giving up half of that growth to this district. So that's the main one. The best source of data, I think, was the one that was prepared by county staff. Over the past 10 years, that cost would have been approximately $11,500.
So there's no additional investment from the county?
There's not.
There's no general fund investment?
There's not.
Okay. And if the EIFD folds, does the county recoup any of that money?
Yes. Yeah, but if it was unspent, of course. Anything unspent would, so a little bit like the dissolution of the former redevelopment agencies, it just kind of gets unrolled and you get sort of your money back. If you have spent money, you don't get those back. And then very importantly, if there were a scenario, and this is not what we're planning here because we don't think it makes sense, but if it were a scenario that you issued debt, like you actually issued bonds, you know, you have a contractual obligation at that point to pay debt service on those bonds, those would be an encumbrance that would have to be honored. But again, we're not contemplating that here. So we'd anticipate unwinding and just re-diverting it back, and you'd say, okay, we wasted a bunch of time, and we gave it a shot, but it didn't work out.
So our investment, other than staff time, financially, it's pretty minimal.
I try to be careful when I say that. In my perspective, yes. Yes.
The way I see it, Sherry, Sherry and I have had a conversation. We say no, and we look at things forever, like, well, we've never done this before, so we shouldn't, you know. I try to be a fairly optimistic person. And I would hope that at some point in time, people are going to change that opinion that we don't want growth and we never want to do this. At some point, maybe that will shift. And if we don't ever ask, we'll never know. So what's the harm in asking? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And if we don't support it, how would we know? And clearly, you know, there's a bit of risk here, but hopefully we're not going to lose everything, you know? I mean, we shouldn't. There's risk in everything we do. I would hope that one of the times that we ask, people are going to start to say yes. And, you know, we need growth. We need growth. We're never going to get anywhere around here if we don't keep asking. So I think this is something that personally I would like to support. We're certainly not going to lose our shirts financially, if I think.
done this before and you have a good plan. I do realize that every place that this has happened, it's been a much bigger scope. That worries me, that we need to have a really solid plan. You really have to have your ducks in a row. You've really got to have good people working with you. Otherwise, it won't work. So, and you've got to present it very, very well. Can't be any gray areas, because that's where you're going to lose confidence. So, you really have to be good at what you do. So, those are my big questions, is, you know, making sure that we're not at risk. So, that's all I have. Thanks.
Supervisor Chris.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I considered a career path one you had taken, the shadow of a manager in Klamath Falls. And they did a similar thing, Oregon State Law and all those sorts of things, of course. And it really played a big part in saving Main Street back in the 1990s. It was the same concept. During tax increase, went back into improving Main Street in order to save it. Some of the questions I have, sir, if this was passed, there's a potential for, it opens the door for potential funding coming in. If we check this box and you apply, I'm summarizing here real quick. If this is formed, you apply for certain grants either with the state or federal, not certain, but it's a box that's checked that elevates you in order to get that grant for funding source.
Absolutely does. I'll give you an example. The Federal Economic Development Administration is in the business of funding infrastructure in parts of cities that are considered lower income. This area, the Landing, for instance, falls within a census tract that's considered lower income. If we say that we have an EIFD formed and we're able to pull some match from that or promise some future match from that, we're more likely to get a grant. We also have the Build Back Better plan that's passed, the billions of dollars that are floating around. We're trying to get our fair share on a number of different projects right now, but this is going to be going on for years. And if you're able to show that you have committed to moving forward on developing infrastructure on your own, you are much more likely to receive that grant. And there are a lot of state programs that look very favorably on cities that have undergone the formation of an EIFD, and check that box is something that moves a grant application to the top of that list.
Right. And in regards to that, like any business, it sounds like a sweep payment plan. If you're buying some, this is a sweep for 45, 50 years to be able to pay back. If it pays off earlier, does it close earlier, or is this still a fund that's used for the full 45 years?
That's a question for Joe. In my experience, and this is in Oregon, we had our districts go out for 30 years. And, we ran our districts, for that full 30 years, and, I was able to build out with other people the South Waterfront, which was just a contaminated old barge building site. And you see, if you drive into Portland, all the skyscrapers that are there now, the Portland State University area, some of the poor neighborhoods like Lentz, were in shambles, they've really turned around. And at the end of that lifespan of 30 years, we could have shut the district down earlier, we could, but we still saw that there were additional benefits that we could reap from keeping that district in place for that full 30 years, that in the long run is going to generate a lot more property tax income and make us a much more prosperous city, more city and county.
All right. But there is an option to shut it down earlier, even though it's not... I understand we're not doing bonds or debts, but there is a potential for that.
Yes, sir. The EIFD law allows you to keep it going if you want to, keep the shop open, or close it as soon as you're done. Our typical practice is close it as soon as you're done. You'll see the plan, if it moves forward today, you'll get to see the actual plan, right? What we would propose in the plan is the earliest of three things would be shutting it down. A time certain, date, year, hitting a dollar amount cap. You're required to set a dollar cap for the city allocation, the county allocation, and the total allocation. So either time, hitting the dollar cap, or completion of the projects that you're trying to pay for. Earliest of the three is typically what we write into the plan.
In regards to the other areas developed there, in Mount Shasta, the private person investment in for infrastructure, those sorts of things, does the landing in these properties offer something that they don't, if they haven't been developed, is there something offered by these properties or this idea that would give us promise these would be developed?
So I'm not sure recalling the question.
Supervisor Cobbs had brought up the other areas where private investors invested for the infrastructure to the place. And if they're not developed, is there something that this property, the landing, or these properties are offering that through this program that would entice business owners to it that's not being enticed to those other areas?
There are all kinds of programs that qualify for tax increment finance, everything from storefront improvements to tenant improvements. The beauty of the way the EIFD is set up is the dollars that are generated in the district, depending on the use, don't necessarily need to be used within the district. So, there are a lot of opportunities to help folks that are in that defined boundary. But also, just from a planning perspective, as you guys know, as soon as you start seeing planning happen, you see good development happening, you see foot traffic, that tends to catalyze people to invest into the community because they see something happening. And we're seeing this as a way to knock the first domino and see what we have follow. And I've seen it happen in a lot of communities.
And I looked at this for a long time over the weekend, but the list of the other cities and counties, I know there's some discussion that they're not always small counties, but I was looking at it from the vantage point too of these aren't lightweights. LA County is not a lightweight fly-by-night operation.
Yeah.
So some of these big ones adds that credibility that if the big ones are doing it, we see a benefit there. The other economic benefits, real quick, or however you want to answer this for the record, how many jobs do you increase the local sales tax revenue that may be increased? I'll leave it at that, kind of an open-ended question, but other social benefits, economic benefits outside of the $11,500 investment will be made shortly.
Thank you, Supervisor. If one of the attachments, we don't have to bring it up, but I'll speak to with the numbers. There was an attachment that had this 31 days.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it, yeah.
Yep, I need it on myself.
That's
I know
right.
It's excuse me. A little over 200 permanent direct jobs sort of on the site between those various components. Aside from those 200 plus, we often as economists look at the multiplier, the indirect and induced jobs. So if you're introducing new residents, they got a shop somewhere and that shopping creates retail jobs as an example. So the 200 plus another what we call 40 indirect and induced, so call it 240 just from the ongoing annual operation. We also quantify, and so what that quantifies in terms of wages, by the way, is about $7.6 million annually in wages in the city and county region from those jobs. That's the permanent ongoing. We also look at the construction period benefits in a lot of our work. So when you're building new improvements and new infrastructure, we quantify those as well. So over 1,200 construction-related job years. Okay, technical term job years means 1 year of employment for one individual. So 1,200 construction-related job years. The wages associated with those are approximately $58 million. So it's one time, just to be very clear, it's one time for a construction period, but those are the numbers. The housing was mentioned earlier. I'll just reiterate it for those that would list housing as a benefit. I'm sorry, the slide is escaping me. So approximately...
It's impressive reading off your phone, too. I should have forwarded ahead if I was going to ask you.
I have no problem.
I just wanted it on the record.
Yeah, thank you. 160 units of market rate, approximately 40 units of affordable is the vision. so 200 units of housing. And then those are the primary quantitative ones. There's a detailed appendix that I don't have immediately available, but that has property tax, sales tax, different sorts of revenues, as well as the expenditures, but it's not all positive. We always have to look on a net basis. So annually, what we were seeing for the county, if this vision is realized, is approximately 46,000 as an annual stabilized revenue, positive. So 46,000 positive. That's top line, minus what you're shaving off to this district, minus your cost of providing county services to this area. Net of all that, 46,000 annually is the estimate. And then the rest of the benefits that we listed off were less quantitative in nature, and those were just quality of life, environmental, building off remediation of contaminated land, installing sustainable infrastructure, so the water, the sewer infrastructure, that's important. I think those are the main ones.
There's all, you know, a volunteer firefighter having an opportunity to have a job there to volunteer in the community to do those sorts of things.
So if I can add a couple, or a little bit of perspective, one of the things, and you know, some folks in Mount Shasta may not agree with me, in the last census, they use a very strange statistical measure, median age. I don't know why. We can throw out the outlier, the oldest person, as opposed to me. And the oldest person, or the average, not average, the median age in Mount Shasta is 58. And we've heard from certain residents that they want to be in a position where they can have their kids come home and work in the area. In addition, we want the folks that are working in our stores and manning the shops and working for the city and working for the hospitals to be able to afford to live in the community. And so when we're talking about a site like The Landing, the concern that I've been dealing with, they would be bringing a mix of, high wage, not necessarily beyond a high school education, and also some white-collar jobs along with it, with a mix of workforce housing and market-rate housing in order to get that development to pencil. And so what we're trying to do is shift the community in such a way that we've got a better spread of who's living there, because right now, in my view, having a community that's based on only two things, as a vacation destination and as a retirement community, is not sustainable over the long term. And so, you know, in my small role, I'm trying to change that trajectory.
And then whatever we do here will set a tone for other areas in the county to be considered such a thing, so this is very serious there. For me, I'll conclude with off-ramps at the right time. I'll identify off-ramps to where, if this is pursued, we will need to pull off what those risks are. I'll stop there.
Any follow-up questions from the board?
I have one. All along, I guess I'm assuming that the city retains ownership of the developed infrastructure. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And have you projected forward what kind of workforce it's going to take to maintain and operate that?
That would, so there are things that are, let me give you an example. For the South Waterfront in Portland, we had a number of developers come in. And we created what we call the Central District Development Agreement that said, hey, developers coming in, we'll pay for the north-south streets and the infrastructure, you pay for east-west. And, and that incented the kind of development. And we did the math over time, and the cost of us taking on that infrastructure investment on our part through tax increment finance paled in comparison to what we saw as a return over time.
But in this case, you're talking about buildings and building maintenance and
yes,
working as the proprietor, having to deal with eviction. And
if we own it, we fix it.
Michael, any follow-up?
Sure. I know schools are excluded from this process. It's unfortunate because they're the biggest lift of the tax revenue, 68% roughly. And with more skin in the game by schools, I think that would also benefit this, I guess, to have some better success. Do the tax rolls in this district just affect the real property? What about equipment and stuff like that? Is that also in this formula as well, so that the supplemental roll that comes out in August, I think, of each year for equipment and that, how does that weigh into this category?
Just within the district boundary, we would expect both the what we call the secured and unsecured to be part of the calculation.
Yeah, I'm sorry, unsecured is what I meant. Sorry. So both of those are included
within the district
in
boundary.
The district. It's not just the secured.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other follow-up questions?
No, thank you.
So I'll just make one comment. One of the things we talk about, I don't think the issue of getting EIT is not going to be a problem getting through. I think the problem is going to be when you want to have something developed. That city, the one I've lived in for decades now, has never allowed, I'm going to use Crystal Geyser as an example. You got a great planner. I've heard that's been true since I've been here. Again, the highlight of my career is where's the for sale sign? We could have been miles ahead with dollars in infrastructure. But at the end of the day, I'm willing to move forward down the path for this reason and this reason only. Because one of the highest property tax values in this county is in South County, 96067 zip code. The properties that are is a small portion of the county properties. I think monetarily wise, there's a risk. But at the end of the day, it's going to be on the city to get this forward. And I would be, because that's going to be me, the likely to have to sit in another damn meeting because of this District 2. But I'm willing to shut it down immediately if this doesn't play out. That's how I look at it. Again, there is risk. It is taken away from dollars from this county. I would remind you that we pay for the plowing of Everett Memorial. This year, the tune of $300,000, we get no support from the city. I got beat up from a previous council member because that landing property is a county, there's a tax agreement. And it's like, well, then bring it forward if you want to redo it. So if this is going to be a partnership, I mean, it's got to be a full partnership. Again, Crystal Geyser is a good example. I don't think we worked hand in hand on that. And we incurred a lot of costs on that front. So that's where I am with this. So if I'll make the motion to move forward to the next step, because there's got to be a plan that we've got to agree on, and it's got to be well-defined. Again, I brought up the fact that, you know, where the Crystal Geyser is, there's no sewer infrastructure there. They could definitely benefit from that. Again, I think just more buy-in at the overall process. So my motion is to make the next step forward. I'll take a second if not.
What does that mean, the next step forward?
There's a plan that's got to come forward. We've got to approve a plan. There's got to build in the off-ramps. I think there's got to be a fully developed total cost of what this is going to look like from a monetary standpoint. That's why I'm going.
So on the agenda worksheet, direct staff to pursue as a joint partner with the city
that's
of Mount Shasta?
Yes.
Okay.
Because this is going to have to come back for us for approval.
Okay.
So you're saying that you
want to say?
We'll call
further discussion.
Yes, please.
So two things. I'm curious. The properties that you have on the map that are, I'll call it, highlighted, are these the targeted properties?
Yes, they are.
So at the last time that you were here, I brought up the Dagallo property. That property was county property at one time, and the city wanted that to be brought annexed in for the potential tax revenue for growth there. And I think the owner at that time wanted the city and sewer service. To date, that has not occurred, and I think that this property has been in the city at least 20 years or more. And so I'm curious why, and that's I-5 frontage, why that's not even a consideration and why that's been neglected to that degree.
I'm not familiar with that property.
Right.
Where the CHP is?
CHP, that open field.
It's on the
west.
It's defined on the map.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know it as a different name. The city hasn't had the money to fix the sagging infrastructure on that site, and that's part of why we're looking to form this district.
But it's not identified in your mapping of the district. of what sites you're looking at.
I think I'm confused, and I'm thinking of the Newman property along I-5. The property that you're mentioning, I am not familiar with it by that name.
I don't know.
So you know when you go over the freeway on-ramp I-5 to CHP, you turn towards the museum, all that to the right is the Delgado property.
Okay. I can research it.
I mean,
and find out. It's new to me, but it doesn't mean it doesn't need to be attended to.
Just north of Lake Street, so
yeah, it's on the north side. East Jesse.
Is that one not in?
East Jesse.
Well, again, so my recommendation is come back with the plan and incorporate all that stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be the. And again, off ramps, definitive dollar, what quote unquote it's going to cost. Again, you know, when we talk about EIFD, there's, I think you touched on administrative costs that could be paid out of that.
Sure.
I mean, there is carrying costs, as we will know. So anyway, still made the motion. Do you have a second?
I believe Supervisor Ogren.
Yes.
Okay, Supervisor Howe.
Well, the decision boils down to something pretty simple to me. It boils down to, am I willing to take half the growth out of the general fund in the short term for a possible gain in the long term? For a general fund that I'm struggling to give raises to county employees on command, so the answer to me is no.
No. Thank you. Supervisor Kopsev?
I'm intrigued, but I think there needs to be further details worked out, and you've heard my concerns. The only other one that I would add to this is that in a proposed plan, and I guess that's what I'm heading towards, that somehow the county would be indemnified from any harm in the future. I don't know if that's a possibility, but it would be something that I would require if it can happen. I'm going to give a yay vote to this just for the planning process to see where this goes, and I'm going to attribute a lot of that to Mayor Tessa Kluwer, because being in business in Mount Shasta for 30 years and the struggles that it was to deal with city government and the change that has occurred in there, I want to at least give that a fair run to see if we can get anywhere.
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
I guess. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for your consideration.
Take 10.
Thank you.
Sorry we took so long.
No worries.